Thank you very much. I don't know what I'm doing up here. I got a seat in the front row. You know, ladies and gentlemen, and fans of my closest friend, I want to ask you something. Wouldn't you think that as long as I was kind enough, or let's not go that far, let's say as long as I was nice enough to come over here to introduce George Burns, that George would have somebody introduce me? He just me walk on, no introduction, no music. Just walk on timidly, you know, like a little puppy that missed the paper. Now, George, this is the second time, of course, that George has done this show. He did it in New York City, and he wanted me to fly to New York to introduce him. He said he was nervous in New York. He wouldn't go on if I weren't there to introduce him. So I told him I'd go. And he said to me, he said, I'll tell you what, Jack, if you come to New York and introduce me, he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pay all of your expenses from Los Angeles to New York and back. I'll pay your hotel bill. It won't cost you a dime. So then I got real angry. And I says, George, look, I've been in show business as long as you have, or longer, and I've saved my money. I'm richer than you are. I don't need you to introduce me. You don't have to spend that money. So he said to me, well, Jack, I'd feel better if you let me pay your expenses. So I said, well, if your health is involved, all right. So I let him do it. And he paid my fare, he paid my hotel bill, I paid the food. If I remember correctly, I paid everything. Well, anyway, I'm going to introduce, really, I've always said my close. You know, when he played the Philharmonic, it seemed almost sacrilegious for a fellow like George Burns to be appearing at a place like the Philharmonic. And I told him that. I said, George, you can't even spell Philharmonic. He says to me, are you kidding? I said, all right, spell it. And he started out, F-I-L. I said, forget it. He said, wait a minute, I'm not through yet. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very, very happy and very proud to be here tonight. To be able to introduce a fellow that I think is one of the great, great entertainers that we have in America. And I'm very happy and proud to say that he is my closest friend. Ladies and gentlemen, George Burns. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. That fellow looked familiar to me. I think he's one of the caddies at Hillcrest. I'm not sure. Well, I'll get to him later. Isn't this beautiful? The Schubert Theater. It finally got me singing in the right place. Well, I got to keep this lit. I can't, you know me, I can't talk unless I smoke. Seeing me without a cigar would be like seeing Toadie Fields and Mama Cass in a Volkswagen. stopping to pick up Kate Smith. I smoke between 15 and 20 cigars a day. Well, at my age, I've got to hold on to something. Look, there's still a lot of things I love to do at my age. I love to sing, and I love to smoke, and I love to, I always enjoyed singing and smoking more than I did, I was never crazy when I was young, the only thing I wanted to get into was show business. I was always afraid that if I did I could hurt myself and never win another Charleston contest. It was always so embarrassing for me to. I was always so embarrassed. Even to this day, whenever I put my cigar into my holder, I close my eyes. Well, I want you to sit back and relax because you're in for a very, very exciting evening. I'm going to sing. Eight songs. And if you like them, I'll sing nine. And if you don't like them, I'll sing 38. All ballads. And I'll sing them slow and sustain the last notes. Let's see, I've got so many great songs, I don't know which one to open with. Now, let me tell you something about an opening song. It's very important that you start out with the right one. I know because I'm an old vaudeville actor. If you start out with the right song, you've got a great opening. And in show business, all you need is a great opening and a great finish. I found out if I've got a great opening and a great finish, I don't have to apologize for all this dull stuff that I do in the middle. Sometimes my opening song is so great that people think it's my finish. Sometimes it is. Okay, Perry, Red Rose Rag. Down in the garden where the red roses grow, oh my, I want to go. Pluck me like a flower, cuddle me an hour, lovey, let me learn that red rose rag. Red leaves are falling in that rosy romance. Bees hum, come, now's your chance. Don't go hunting possums, mingle with the blossoms in the flowery bowery dance. Oh, honeymoon, shine on in June. Hear me croon, there's a lovely tune. Howl it, 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 howl it. That's a great song, but it's not an opening. It's not a great opening. When the evening sun is sinking. When the evening sun is sinking, I've been thinking of my little log cabin home. I was never meant for president, but you can bet I'll be content to stay there never again to roam. The house is not good looking. You'll enjoy the cooking. You'll eat my mother's apple pie. There is no wonderful architecture, see? Hold it. Hold it, hold it. That's good, but it's still not a song. It's not good enough to keep your mind off my dull stuff. I think this is it. Pack up your sins. Okay.
Pack up your sins and go to the devil in Hades. He'll find the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Jones, Browns, Hooligans, Cones, and Bradys. They got a wonderful tune that went to the devil because those jazz bands put a trick in it, a little kick in it, a raggy pick in it. They got a couple of old performers in heaven making you go to bed at 11. Pack up your sin, go to the devil, and you never have to go to bed at all. The doggies on the street get together and play. Talk things over, get married right away. Chicken lays the egg can't be found. If Mr. Rooster didn't come around, oh, hold it, hold it, hold it.
You know? Now, let me tell you something about these songs. These songs were all big hits when I first started in show business. You won't believe this, but after one of my performances, Calvin Coolidge left the theater whistling Red Rose Rag. And that was quite a compliment because Coolidge never moved his upper lip. Can't get over it. It's Schubert Theater. You know, I played nothing but small-time vaudeville theaters until I was 27 years old. I played some awful places. I played one theater that was so bad that the headliner was Swain's Cats and Rats. Things were kind of tough, but kids nowadays, they got it made. They with records and with television, they get to be stars overnight. I know because I started a few kids, like Bobby Darin and Ann Margaret and Bobby Rydell. Let me tell you a little story about Ann Margaret. She came into my office. She was about 19 years old. And she says, "Mr. Burns," she says, "my name is Ann Margaret, and I understand that you're doing a show in Las Vegas, and I'd like to be on the show." I says, "Well, what do you do?" She says, "I'm a singer." I said, "Let me hear you sing a song." She sang a song. She was great, so I took her. And she got to be a star overnight. I sent for her 6 months later. I says, "Annie, how about playing Vegas?" She says, "Let me hear you sing a song." I sang a song, and she took me. Well, of course, I'm exaggerating, but kids move very fast. Took me a long, long time, but I loved every minute of it. I was crazy about show business. All my life, I wanted to sing, I wanted to dance, I wanted to act. I wanted to be on the stage, and I made it, and I don't know how. Nobody liked my singing but me. I'd be standing out there singing my heart out, loving the audience, and they would despise me. I was despised so often, I thought I was doing well. Then I was a buck dancer, but I could only tap with my right foot. My left foot wanted me to go into some other business. Then I did a dramatic sketch and people laughed. I became a comedian. Nobody laughed. So I decided to become a straight man because a straight man does nothing. I figured the comedian or the comedian asks the questions, the straight man, all I'd have to do is repeat that question. I repeat the question, they do the punchline, they get a laugh, and I'm in show business. And it worked. I remember when I was 19 years old, I met this beautiful little girl, her name was Lily Lamont. I asked her to do an act with me, and she invited me up to her apartment. When I got there, the lights were low and the music was soft, and she had on a black negligee. And she said, "How would you like to have a drink?" Well, I figured, here's my chance to see if I could make it as a straight man. So I repeated the question. I says, "How would you like to have a drink?" And she had one. Then she said, "Would you care for another one?" And I repeated, "Would you care for another one?" And she had another one, and after five or six drinks, she got stoned. And she says, "Let's go into the bedroom." And I said, "Let's go into the bedroom." And when we were in bed, she says, "Aren't you going to turn out the lights?" And I says, "Aren't you going to turn out the lights?" And she turned out the lights, and I went home. She didn't get any laughs, so I left. That girl pretty near ruined my career. I was 57 years ago, and I still can't figure out what made that girl think she was funny. But in those days, I would do anything to stay in show business. I remember I did a single. My name was Harry Pierce. And my billing was Harry Pierce, a singer from Rhode Island and an act of Providence. Look, I figured as long as I was laying off, I might as well have classy billing. And somehow I was booked into the Gem Theater on Houston Street on the Lower East Side of New York. I got the $15 for 3 days, $5 a day, and the contract had a no-cancellation clause in it. And in those days, they could cancel you after the first performance. And after the matinee, the manager was waiting for me in the wings. He says, look, kid, he says, that act of yours can close my theater. You're booked here for 3 days for $15. Here's the $15 and go home. I says, not me. I'm booked for 3 days. I'm going to play the 3 days. He says, I'll give you $20. Go home. I says, no, all right. So you didn't like my first show. For my second show, I'll change my numbers. I'll open with Tiger Girl, and then I'll sing In the Heart of a Cherry. And for the finish, I'll do my big number. I'll be waiting for you, Bill, when you come back from San Juan Hill. He said, I'll make it $25. I says, no, sir, I'm staying. I'm a performer. I've even got cards printed. He says, okay, kid, you can stay, but give me back your key to the men's room. And that was kind of bad, because that's where I was dressing. And let me tell you something. When you don't go to the men's room for 3 days, it doesn't help your singing any. In fact, after the second day, I didn't dare to do my yodeling finish. And I used to change my name every week. I had to. I couldn't get a job with the same name twice. I remember sitting in Folly Marcus's office. He was a small-time booking agent. And the theater manager came in, and he said, where could I find Maurice Valenti? I said, I'm Maurice Valenti. I thought I was. And he gave me a contract to play the Michael Theater in Brooklyn. And it said Maurice Valenti and his Wonder Dog. So I signed it. I told you I'd do anything to stay in show business. When I got myself a piece of liver, I went out and caught myself a dog and went to the Myrtle Theater to do my act. I walked out on the stage with the dog under my arm, and I stood there and sang my songs. And after the second number, the middle of the second number, the dog did his act. Twice. Ruined my finish. I couldn't do my sand dance. Now this you're not going to believe. I did an act with a seal. It wasn't even my act. I was living on 45th Street in this little boarding house, and this actor was living there. His name was Betts. He did an act with a seal, Captain Betts and Flipper. And he was booked into the Dewey Theater on 14th Street, and he got sick, and he asked me to take his place. I says, look, Betts, you're silly. I never worked with a seal. I wouldn't know what to do. He says, George, he says, the seal does the whole act. The curtain goes up, the seal's on a little platform. You're standing there with a ball in your hands and with your pockets full of fish. And you throw the ball to the seal, and the seal twirls the ball, he juggles the ball, he bounces the ball, and he flips it back to you, and you throw him a piece of fish, and he applauds with his flippers. Then he does four more tricks, and after each trick, you throw him a piece of fish, and again he applauds with his flippers. And at the finish of the act, there's a rack of horns. The seal goes in back of the rack and blows into the horns and plays Yankee Doodle. Pup, 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 pup. And at the finish of Yankee Doodle, he presses a lever, two American flags come up, you throw him a piece of fish, and as he's applauding with his flippers, you're taking bows, and the curtain comes down. I opened at the Dewey Theater and got away with it. But I had a date that night with a very pretty girl. Her name was Trixie Hart. She was also in show business. And I was ashamed to meet her, because after you do four shows with your pockets full of fish, you know, you don't smell too good. But I met her, and she didn't notice it because she was doing an act with Fink's Mules. In fact, she complimented me on my aftershave lotion. Then I did a ballroom dancing act. Dunlap and Rosita. My name was Dunlap. And in those days, all ballroom dancing acts dressed alike. The girl wore an evening gown, and the fellow wore a full dress suit. My full dress suit cost me $22.50. I bought it in one of those upstairs stores. If you walked up a flight, you'd save $5. And the way the suit fitted me, it looked like I walked up a flight and fell down too. The vest had a little rubber loop at the bottom that you'd button onto the top button of your pants to hold the vest down. And after the first cleaning, the suit shrunk. And instead of holding the vest down, the loop pulled my pants up. I was the only ballroom dancer in the world who did a flat-footed waltz on his toes. I had to stay up there. When I got down on my heels, it would hurt me. And Rosita bought her dress in one of those rental places where they make a beautiful dress and they rent it out 50 times for $10 a night and then 50 times for $5 a night and for $2 a night, then they would sell it. And that's the dress she bought. It was a blue dress with long blue sleeves and had a very heavy gold lace skirt. And before Rosita went on the stage, she used to tie a little black velvet ribbon around her neck. And she tied it kind of tight because she was very, very skinny and she wanted her cheeks to puff out. But she tied it so tight it affected her hearing. And let me tell you something, when you're doing a dancing act and you can't hear the music, it's murder. And we did a pivot and finish. She put her arms around my neck and I would swing her in the air. And when we opened at the Colonial Theater in Altoona and went into this pivoting finish, this heavy gold lace skirt left the dress and flew into the audience. And when she took her arms from around my neck, her blue sleeve stayed there. Then her ribbon fell off and her cheeks fell in. And my rubber loop broke and I lost my pants. While she was kidding, we didn't look neat. She with her skirt off and her cheeks in, and me with the sleeves around my neck and my pants down. And not only closed us, they closed the theater. Anyway, I changed partners until I was 27 years old. And then I got my big break. And I married her. And even when I worked with Gracie, I was pathetic. I'd walk on the stage and say to Gracie, "How is your brother?" And she'd talk for 17 minutes, and I'd just stand there and smoke a cigar. I did absolutely nothing and used to put on makeup to do it. Then she would do an Irish jig, and I would point to her feet, and then she'd exit, and I'd follow, and that's how I became a star. And believe me, it wasn't easy. Sometimes I forgot to follow her. I remember we played Oklahoma City, and the next day the newspapers came out. One paper said, "Gracie Allen is a great comedian with a wonderful delivery and perfect timing. There's no telling how far she could go if she worked alone." But that didn't faze me. Made me work harder. I finally developed so that I could hold my cigar in either hand. Well, now I've got to do an open. I've got to find an opening song. My girl, there's going to be a festival this evening. There's going to be a festival this evening. A gathering of happy people there. There'll be noted individuals of prominent distinctiveness to permeate the social atmosphere. Everyone who's anyone will be there to honor my lovely fiancée. There'll be a grand ovation, special ostentation when the preacher gives the lovely bride a oh, 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 my. Hold it. That would be a great opening song at the Pink Pussycat, but not here at the Schubert Theater. Wait a minute, what's the matter with me? I can open with a song got on my album. And I made an album. It was called A Musical Trip with George Burns. I made it 5 years ago. Sold one copy. My sister Goldie bought it. Played it once and made me buy it back. Anyway, here it is, Grizzly Bear. Out in San Francisco where the weather's fair, they got a dance out there that's called the Grizzly Bear. All your other loving dances don't compare. They're kind of spoony and little less than croony. Talk about the bears that Teddy Roosevelt shot. They don't compare with what old San Francisco's got. Come on, honeydew, and I'll show to you the dance called the Grizzly Bear. Thank you.
Snap your shoulders to the ceiling. Lordy, lordy, what a feeling. I've got some clothes to your lady. Close your eyes and do some napping. Something nice is gonna happen. Hug up close to your baby. Swing her everywhere. Show your darling beau just how to go to Buffalo. Oh, do the grizzly. Oh, the grizzly. Yeah, you do it. Oh, you do it. Oh, you do it. Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah, that's good. That song is too good. I don't want to finish that. Frank Sinatra's back in show business, and old Blue Eyes might steal it. How about that Sinatra, thinking of retiring when he was 57 years old? When I was 57, I had pimples. I'll never retire. In what other business can a man my age, 78 years old, walk out on the stage, smoke a cigar, tell a few jokes, sing a few songs, and use the same color lipstick that Dolores Del Rio uses? Retire? When the time comes for me to go, I'm even going to take my music with me. Al Jolson had a theory about retirement, not his retirement. He wanted all the other actors to retire, so he'd be the only one left in show business. And he could handle it, too. He was sort of a strange kind of a man. He never went around with any of the other big successful stars. He only palled around with actors who had no talent. I was one of his closest friends. And that singing style of his, he found that by accident. One night he was having dinner before the show at Lindy's restaurant. He had a double order of vegetables and sour cream, which consists of radishes, cucumbers, and onions. And that night at the theater, when he went into April showers, he got a stomach ache. And he sang, "Though April showers, may come your way, how? They bring the flowers." And the audience loved it, and that's how he found the style. And that was just from the radishes and cucumbers. Then when the onions hit him, he fell down on one knee, stayed there, finished the song, and turned out to be a sensation. Here I am rambling about Jolson. I still haven't found an opening song. Look, here are two cute little songs. They're not opening songs, but you'd been such a charming audience, I thought I'd throw this in for free. They're about 80 years old. They were written by a piano player called the Candy Kid. He used to work for a house of ill repute in San Francisco on the Barbary Coast. And late at night, when the girls got to working, they'd come down in the parlor, and he would sing them these songs. The reason I know these songs is my sister Goldie taught them to me. Okay. I guess I'll take the train back home. There's no more sights here left for me to see. I've wined and dined and gazed on bill of fares till mother's homemade pies look good to me. San Francisco is a grand old place. When I get back, I'll never, never roam. Tell those cable cars to wait and open up that golden gate. I'm gonna take the train back home to San Francisco. I'm gonna take the train back home to Powell and Market, to see the ferry building, to wave to Oakland, to eat at Fisherman's Wharf, to visit Sausalito. It took me so long to finish the song. I just missed the train back home. Cute song. Then he sang a very sad song, and the girls would sit there and they'd cry their eyes out. And whenever I sing this song, sometimes I get so choked up that I can't even finish it. This is sad.
Sweetheart number one is nearly 50, while number two is 22 today. Number three came like a springtime flower, and she'll be 2 years old the 1st of May. My heart in its triangular devotion beats for the ones in life so dear to me. A mother, a wife, and a baby to share my life. That sweetheart, number one, two.
There we go, I can't finish. Here I am rambling about Jolson. I still haven't found an opening song. Look, here are two cute little songs. They're not opening songs, but you'd been such a charming audience, I thought I'd throw this in for free. They're about 80 years old. They were written by a piano player called the Candy Kid. He used to work for a house of ill repute in San Francisco on the Barbary Coast. And late at night, when the girls got through working, they'd come down in the parlor, and he would sing them these songs. The reason I know these songs is my sister Goldie taught them to me. Okay.
I guess I'll take the train back home. There's no more sights here left for me to see. I've wined and dined and gazed on bill of fares till mother's homemade pies look good to me. San Francisco is a grand old place. When I get back, I'll never, never roam. Tell those cable cars to wait and open up that golden gate. I'm gonna take the train back home to San Francisco. I'm gonna take the train back home to Powell and Market, to see the ferry building, to wave to Oakland, to eat at Fisherman's Wharf, to visit Sausalito. It took me so long to finish this song. I just missed the train back home.
Cute song. Then he sang a very sad song, and the girls would sit there and they'd cry their eyes out. And whenever I sing this song, sometimes I get so choked up that I can't even finish it. This is sad.
Sweetheart number one is nearly 50, while number two is 22 today. Number three came like a springtime flower, and she'll be 2 years old the 1st of May. My heart in its triangular devotion beats for the ones in life so dear to me. A mother, a wife, and a baby to share my life. That sweetheart, number one, two.
There we go, I can't finish. Well, now that I stop crying, I must tell you a little something. I'm a member of the Hillcrest Country Club. And the other, some time ago, four of us were having lunch. There was Jag Benny and Georgie Jessel and Groucho Marx and myself. And I took a look at us. And believe me, we didn't look like the Brady Bunch. We looked more like Mission Impossible. And then Rudy Vallee came over and joined us. That didn't help our rating any. And I said, fellas, I said, let's face it. I said, the kids nowadays have got it made. They have love-ins and love-outs and freak-ins and freak-outs, and they smell flowers, and they write poetry, and they wear love beads. Instead of us sitting around here, let's all go to Griffith Park and mingle with some of these kids. Maybe some of that youth will rub off on us. And maybe what we got might rub off on them. If it doesn't drop off before we get there. I finally convinced them, and the five of us left for Griffith Park. And not to look conspicuous, we all wore sandals and wide leather belts and Indian headbands and love beads. Jessel wore his beads hanging down the back. He didn't want to cover up his medals. And Jack Benny brought his violin, and Groucho brought his guitar. And Rudy Ballet brought an orchestration of Vagabond Lover that was arranged for him by John Philip Sousa's father. And I wore my buckskin vest that Daniel Boone gave me for my bar mitzvah. And when we got to Griffith Park, the kids took a look at us. It was the first time any of us got such a big laugh without saying anything. We looked like a bunch of flower children that hadn't been watered in 50 years. Then we sat down on the grass. That took about 20 minutes. Jessel never did make it. Those medals are so heavy, he was afraid if he got down, he won't be able to get up. So we propped him up against a tree. And you know, because of Jessel's medals, all his wives left him? How would you like to be married to a guy that would go to bed every night wearing all those medals? They couldn't get any sleep. All night long, he tinkled. Well, anyway, we were sitting on the grass, and I read in the papers that the kids were smoking grass, so I thought I'd try it. So I took a handful of grass, put it in my holder, and I lit it, and it's nothing. But the fertilizer was murder. Then the police came. And they says, what's going on here? What have you guys been drinking? I said, Geritol on the rocks. He says, well, you better break this up. The park closes at 8 o'clock. I says, but officer, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He's still got 4 hours. He says, by the looks of this group, it'll take you that long to get out of here. Well, we broke it up, but the policeman was wrong. It took us longer. We had to come back. We forgot Jessel. Wait, I think I've got a good opening song. Johnny Warner. I think this'll do it.
Oh, little Johnny Warner was sitting in the corner of a swell cafe eating his heart away because he had no girl.
Yeah, that sounds like a good opening song. I think I like it. At another table sat a girl named Mabel with a fellow who Johnny knew in his head began to whirl. So far, it's good.
Little Johnny sighed. Here's what Johnny cried, he hollered. Where did you get that girl? Oh, you lucky devil. Where did you get that girl? Tell me on the level. Have you ever kissed her? Has she got a sister? Lead me, lead me. Lead me to her, Mr. G. I wish that I had a girl. I love her. Goodness, I would love her. And if you got another, I'd take her home to mother. Oh, where did you get that girl?
No. You know, when you've got so many great songs, it gets to be a handicap. Well, let's see. Let me take a look. Yeah, I think it's time for intermission. I don't know what you're going to do, but I've got something planned, very exciting, that's waiting for me in the dressing room. Bowl of hot soup. I'll see you later. Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed your drink and your smoke. And hope you had time Now, this is a real high-class city. They probably don't have those here. Look, while you're getting settled in your seats, let me tell you a little something about myself. This is a short little piece. I was born in New York City on the Lower East Side. I came from a very large family. We were 7 sisters and 5 brothers. That doesn't mean that my father was a great lover. It means that we were very, very poor. You see, we couldn't afford any coal or any wood. And in the wintertime, it was freezing at our house. And when you go to bed and you're that cold, anybody can be a great lover. We'd lived in California, I might have been the only son. You know, before the show, Jack and I were sitting in the dressing room, and I took a look at him, and he looks great. Look, I look good, too. You know, in show business, you can't allow yourself to get old. I know an actor, Clarence Evans, he's 86 years old, and he had his teeth capped, and his nose fixed, and his face lifted, and he wears contact lenses, and he wears a toupee. He looked so good, nobody knew he was dead. His wife still doesn't know it. In fact, she's suing him for divorce. You know, Jack and I have been very close friends for about... Wait a minute. This is great. This was written after World War I by Buddy De Silva, Irving Caesar, and George Gershwin. Now, with writers like that, it's got to be a great song. And it's highly dramatic, so please pay attention. Perry? Say, have you ever been away? Say, have you ever been away? Have you ever missed the dear old USA? Then you get an itching in your shoes. See how quick you'll get the blues. See how quick you'll get the Yankee Doodle blues. You're singing, there's no land as grand as my land. From California to Manhattan Isle, north, south, that sunny skyland, I love every mile. They're playing Yankee Doodle. That's the melody that keeps ringing in my ears. Yankee Doodle, that's the melody, makes you stand right up and cheer. I'm coming, USA, I'll say I love you. Make me lose those Yankee Doodle blues, oh. They say that Europe is wonderful with all its ancient junk. It's not as good as Kokomo, because Kokomo's the bunk. We couldn't see old London, it was covered by a fog. We had to move from Paris, cause we couldn't eat a frog. From Bay we went to Oakland and started on the round. But Oakland smells sweet and pretty as it sounds. A Russian Bolshevik could try to get my scalp. And then I wore my welcome out sliding down the Alps. Hello, Miss Liberty. I'll say you're a bear. And when the custom officer said to me, what do you declare? I answered, Yankee Doodles. That's the melody that keeps ringing in your ears. Yankee Doodle. That's enough of that. Okay. That number is so good, I'm going to save it for my finish. Well, I got a finish. All I need is an opening now. As I said, Jack, Benny, and I, we've been very close friends for about 55 years. And there's a reason for it. I always told him how much I love his violin playing. And he always told me how much he loves my singing. And that's how we've stayed friends all these years. Lying to each other. And sometimes I'm introduced as the comedian's comedian, which is absolutely ridiculous. It's because I can make Jack Benny laugh. Now, Jack Benny makes the whole world laugh. I make him laugh. I'm the comedian's comedian. He makes a fortune. And I don't even make him laugh. He makes himself laugh. Like, I ran into him once, and I wasn't doing anything, and he looked at me, and he started to laugh, and I says, "What are you laughing at? I'm not doing anything." He said, "I know, but you're not doing it on purpose." I'll tell you how this all happened. The first day I met him, the next day he phoned me. And in the middle of the conversation, we were disconnected. And that night we had a date for dinner. And when I came into the restaurant, he laughed and he hit the table and he fell down and he pointed to me and he said, "George," he said, "that thing that you did to me this afternoon is the funniest thing that anybody's ever done to me." I said, "What did I do?" He says, "Hanging up in the middle of the phone conversation." That's the first laugh I ever got from Jack Benny. Up until then, I didn't realize I was the comedian's comedian. And that's happened 55 years ago, and to this day, every time I phone him, I still hang up on him. He doesn't laugh at it anymore, but if I didn't do it, he'd think I was slipping. And Eddie Cantor went to his house for dinner one night. I says, "Eddie, you want to have some fun? Make Jack a $10 bet that if he calls me on the phone, I won't hang up on him." Sure enough, my phone rang, and we talked. And Jack says, "Aren't you going to hang up on me?" I said, "No, I got a half a Cantor's bet." That he didn't laugh at. But the things that he laughs at, you won't believe this. We were at a party one night. Now, he had a piece of white thread stuck on the lapel of his coat. And I said, "Oh, so that's what they're wearing now. Do you mind if I borrow it?" And I took the piece of white thread off his lapel and I put it on my lapel. Now, that's the whole bit. And I'm sure nobody's going to steal that from me. He fell down 3 times. Next day, I took a piece of white thread, put it in the box, and sent it to his house with a little note on it. And I said, "Thanks for letting me wear this last night." An hour later, Mary called me up. She says, "That piece of white thread got here about an hour ago, and Jack is still on the floor laughing." She says, "As soon as he stops laughing, I think I'm going to leave him." And then before we were married, we used to eat together every night. And eating with Jack is quite an experience. He never likes what he orders. He only likes what you order. And we were in this restaurant, and he had lamb chops, and I had a steak. And he looked at my steak, and his mouth started to water. And he said, would you like a piece of my lamb chop?" I said, "No, then you'll want a piece of my steak." Fell down twice. And the next night, we're in the same restaurant. He said, "Your steak looked so good last night. It looks delicious. I'm going to order it tonight." I says, "Good, I'll have lamb chops." He looked at my lamb chops, and his mouth started to water. He said, "Would you like a piece of the steak?" I said, "No, then you'll want a piece of my lamb chop." He only fell down once because he heard that joke before. Another night, he had roast beef and I had chicken. He looked at my chicken. I says, "Hold it." I says, "You like chicken?" He says, "Yeah." I says, "You take my chicken and I'll take your roast beef." He looked at my roast beef and his mouth started to water. I didn't say anything because sometimes even a comedian's comedian gets tired of getting laughs. Then one night we were invited to Louis B. Mayer's house. He had a musicale to introduce his new singing star, Jeanette MacDonald. And Gracie and Mary and Jack and I went. And after dinner they had 2 rows of chairs around the piano. And when Jeanette MacDonald got up to sing her famous song, Indian Love Call, a hush fell over the room. And I leaned over to Jack and I whispered to him, I said, "Jack, when this lovely lady starts to sing, it would be very rude if you were to laugh." Well, she no sooner got the first note out of her throat. His shoulders shook, he laughed, he fell down, they had to carry him out of the room. So he not only ruined Jeanette MacDonald's song, but he ruined Louis B. Mayer's musicale. See, you see, I'm not the only one that made him laugh. Jeanette MacDonald used to make him laugh, too. Well, after all, you can't blame him. Indian Love Call is a very funny song. Now, here's a cute song. It's not an opening song. But if I ever find an opening song, this is going to be my second song. Perry, Monkey Rag.
Way down in Africa, every evening in the bamboo trees, some chimpanzees, monkey banjos nightly would be strumming. They would be humming in his voice and buzzing bees. A big baboon had a band with the best in monkey land, played ragtime grand. This big baboon was requested to compose a tune one night in June. Wrote a thing to Snuggy and he called a thing to Monkey and he gave it to the band to play. Oh, the night was a sight when the monkeys there began to swing and sway. When the monkeys do the monkey rag, Squarish Monkey was on a jag. Laugh until you're inside, the crack by the curl, the tail, wiggle the back. Everybody's crazy about the rag that rag. Honky Junky Monkey, they call the thing the monkey. Honky Junky Monkey.
Okay. That's going to be my second song. If I don't find an opening song by Tuesday, we'll have to break this up. Now, I'd like you to meet my conductor and my arranger and a great musician, Perry Botkin, ladies and gentlemen.
Perry.
And also all these great musicians, Perry. And my piano player, Morty Jacobs. Morty. I must tell you, last night, Morty and I took a walk down La Cienega, and we went into a little nightclub, and a beautiful young girl, about 19 years old, came out on the stage with absolutely nothing on, and she sang on a clear day you could see forever. I'd never go into that place again. The soup was ice cold. Nudity today is really something. There was a show, O Calcutta, and everybody on the stage was naked. You're going to see a movie today, and men and women go to bed together naked. That's not my kind of show business. I'd catch cold if I smoked a cigar without a holder on it. If I got in bed with a naked girl, she better be able to sing harmony. And the only thing I take off is my right sock. My age, my right foot is the only thing that still works. Let you in a little sad story. Last Monday, the big toe on my right foot stopped wiggling. It's kind of bad because that's the foot I dance with. I don't know why people are making such a fuss about nudity. There isn't a day goes by that all of us don't take our clothes off. When I get undressed to go to bed at night, am I supposed to stand in front of a mirror and applaud myself for 20 minutes? I think 15 minutes is plenty. And when I was young, it was different. I remember playing the Chicago Theater during the Chicago World's Fair. I was on the bill with Sally Rand, the fan dancer, and she was supposed to be very, very naughty. She did nothing. She came out with flesh-colored leotards, and then the stage on the lights were dark blue, you could hardly see her. And when she did the fan dance, the fans were so big they covered her completely. And that was it. In fact, she took sick one night. I took her place, and nobody knew the difference. You know, about 3 weeks ago, I recorded two songs. Simon Smith and his Dancing Bear and Dayton, Ohio, 1903. This is true. They were written by Randy Newman, a young composer who was really great. And he played piano for me when I made the record, and I noticed that Randy is sitting in the front row. So let's get him up here to play for me. Come on, Randy.
Let's sing a song of long ago, when things were green and moving slow, and people would stop to say hello, or they'd say hi to you. Would you like to come over for tea? The missus and me. It's a real nice way to spend the day in Dayton, Ohio, on a lazy Sunday afternoon in 1903. Let's sing a song of long ago, when things could grow and days flowed quietly. The air was clean and you could see, and folks were nice to you. Would you like to come over for tea? With the missus and me. It's a real nice way to spend the day in Dayton, Ohio, on a lazy Sunday afternoon in 1903.
Isn't that a darling song? And now, Randy, let's do Simon Smith. That's on the other side of the record. So, Randy, turn over.
I may go out tomorrow if I can borrow a coat to wear. I'd step out in style with my sincere smile and my dancing bear. Outrageous, alarming, courageous, charming. Oh, who would think a boy in bear could be well accepted everywhere? It's just amazing how fair people can be. How fair people can be. Seen at the nicest places where wealth and faces all stop to stare. Making the grandest entrance is Simon Smith and his dancing bear. They love us, won't they? They feed us, don't they? Oh, who would think a boy in bear could be well accepted everywhere? It's just amazing how fair people can be. I may go out tomorrow if I can borrow a coat to wear. Oh, I'd step on the stile with my sincere smile and my dancing bear. Who needs money when you're funny? The big attraction everywhere will be Simon Smith and his dancing bear. It's Simon Smith and the amazing dancing.
Thank you, Randy, for coming up here tonight. And to show my appreciation, any time you want a date with my sister Goldie, I'll she'll pay you. Ladies and gentlemen, Randy Newman. I enjoy everything. Well, most everything. I went to one party I didn't enjoy. It was my own fault. Everything I did that night was wrong. I went to Vincent Price's house. He had a very intimate party, about 400 people. And any time you put 400 people into a room that can only hold 70, they got to be intimate. And Vincent took me around the house. He showed me. His walls are all covered with beautiful paintings. And he said, George, he says, isn't it exciting to see some of these great masterpieces? Well, exciting. He spoke to the wrong fellow. I know nothing about paintings. The only thing that excites me is if the super's hot. But I didn't want to look stupid, so I painted. I pointed to one of the paintings. I said, "That's a beautiful painting." And the artist who did that is going places. He says he came and he went. That's a Michelangelo. I says, "Well, I'm sorry, I missed him. When did he leave?" Never said a word. He just stared at me for about 30 seconds, then pulled open my breast pocket and poured his drink into it. Guess it was a bad martini. And I was sitting at a very nice table. I was sitting with Edie Adams, and there was the Jack Lemons and the Walter Matthaus. And Groucho came over to the table and told Edie Adams that he dreamt about her last night and thanked her for an exciting evening and walked away. And Edie turned to me. She said, "I had the same dream." She said, "Groucho is nothing. I walked out in the middle of it." Then I noticed that Carol Channing was leaving. It was early. I says, "Carol, why are you going? The party is just getting started." She says, I'm coming back. I'm just going home to change my clothes." I said, "Why? You look beautiful." She says, "I do." She says, "Look over there, wearing the same outfit I'm wearing." And she was right. It was a cerise jacket with green beads and a big gold medallion and a ruffled shirt with a ruffled front and lace cuffs and bell-bottom striped pants, and the shoes had diamond buckles on them. And Liberace looked beautiful. In fact, I was going to ask him for a dance, but I didn't want to crush the ruffles on his shirt. And you know, the women and the men, they dress alike. You can't tell who's who. I made a terrible mistake. I walked up to Governor Reagan. I said, "Liza, I saw you in Cabaret, and you were marvelous." He just looked at me and poured his drink into my coat pocket. By now, I was getting pretty soggy. But the funniest sight of the evening was Joel Grey dancing with Raquel Welch. He looked like he had three heads. All I saw was the back of his neck, but I think he was smiling. And she had to do the leading. I guess he couldn't see. He ran into the wall twice. And the orchestra was playing a wild rock number, and he was doing a waltz. I guess when he danced with her, he not only couldn't see, he couldn't hear. And Warren Beatty was there. Every girl at the party tried to date him. You know, somebody told me that Warren Beatty goes out with two or three girls every night. I wouldn't do what he's doing for all the money in the world. Well, come to think of it, I couldn't do what he's doing for all the money. I'm lucky if I can hold on to my electric toothbrush. But I kind of felt sorry for him. You know, I've been around for a lot of years. Pardon me. I've been around for a lot of years, so I thought I'd give him a little advice. I went over and I said, "Warren," I said, "instead of running around with all these girls, when you go to bed at night, why don't you do what I do? Why don't you have a bowl of hot vegetable soup?" He poured his drink into my cummerbund. And when I danced with Joshua Gabor, I had to take very small steps because by now my pants were shrinking. After the dance, I said to Jaja, "That's a beautiful ruby you've got in your belt buckle. It turned out to be the cherry from Warren Beatty's cocktail." Then I went back to my table to dry off. And the minute I sat down, I felt somebody tugging at my pants leg. I looked under the table. It was Foster Brooks. He says, "Hand me a glass of scotch." I gave it to him. I said, "Foster, you better sober up. If you keep drinking like that, it's going to ruin your image." He hiccuped and poured his drink into my shoe. But now I had booze in my shoe and in my pockets and my cummerbund. And to make matters worse, when I drove home, a cop stopped me. I says, "Officer, what did I do?" He says, "Nothing. I smelled you going by." I said, "Well, you won't believe this story, but I just came from a party," I says, "and Foster Brooks and Warren Beatty and Governor Reagan and Vincent Price poured liquor all over me." He says, "You're right. I don't believe the story." I said, would you like to feel my cummerbund?" He said, "Wait a minute." He says, "Are you George Burns?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "My wife, Millie, is crazy about you. She watches you all the time on all the talk shows. She thinks you're great. She's practically in love with you." I said, "Well, thank you." I says, maybe she'd like my autograph." He said, "She certainly would. Put it right here on this ticket." Well, that was my evening that night, and it wasn't the greatest. Wait a minute, hold on to your seats. Ladies and gentlemen, this is my opening song. Augustus J. McCann was a hempbacked married man. He has been fighting with his wife since married life began. One night at 3:30, while out upon a spree, a motor knocked him down and out and nearly broke his knee. One guy looked down and said, "I think this bloke is dead." But when he said, "Let's take him home," McCann jumped up and said, he hollered, "Don't take me home. Please don't take me home. Tell me, what did I do to you? Oh, have a little pity. I'm a poor married man. In search of peace I roam. I'm with you most anything you do, so please don't take me. I'm not going. You can't make me. Yes, I'm staying. Oh, please, don't take me home." Thank you very much. Well, that was my opening song. In the beginning of the show, I told you in show business, all you need is a great opening and a great finish. Well, you just heard my great opening. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear my great finish. I've had a marvelous time. You've been a charming audience. And thank you very, very much.